Welcome to the Tech Lounge with me, Christian Schiller, where every episode I invite someone into the lounge and we discuss what it is they do in the world of technology. Today into the Tech Lounge, I invite Fabian Q. Veit. What an awesome name. The CEO of Make. Make.com is a pretty, it's been around for a while, pretty well-established automation platform, which like many other tools and platforms in its space, has now become a powerful AI orchestrator. I actually use Make.com myself to automate various things for my newsletter and a few other tasks here and there. So again, it was an interview from a Web Summit last year where I got to speak to someone behind a product that I actually know and use. And again, because this is from Web Summit last year, there's a little bit of background noise. I've done my best to clean it up. If you are looking for a tool to summarize YouTube videos, PDFs, articles, lectures, and other audio and documents and images, all sorts of files, and you want to use it to instantly create notes, mind maps, and many more learning and productivity aids, then take a look at NoteGPT, a new AI-powered learning tool and platform. Head on over to go.christianschiller.com/NoteGPT to find out more.
So Make, now I know in the past it was also Integromat.
Yes. Integromat, yeah.
It actually, Integromat comes from integration and automation.
That makes sense.
But yeah, like, it's hard to spot and it's hard to scale with this name internationally. So we decided to switch things up.
Yeah. And it's one of these sort of automation platforms that I'm not really sure where it fit in the scheme of kind of the big three, including yourselves. I feel like you've been around for longer than some, but maybe not longer than others. So where did the company come from in that journey of sort of automation, the pre-AI automation platform?
Yeah, so I joined the business after the acquisition by Celonis. Okay. I was running operations at Celonis before that. Okay. And then was working on some strategy projects. One of them was this acquisition of Integromat.
Okay.
But we made a very conscious decision to keep the business quite separate and keep scaling and investing, because we saw it's an exciting product, lots of love from the users. And so until today, I'm working very, very closely with the two founders of Integromat. They're still on board and working with me every day. And the original story is they were running a business that is similar to what you know from Groupon, which is like this coupon type of business. So they needed a lot of automation. And instead of like taking something off the shelf, they built their own solution for it back then.
I feel like I've heard this story.
Yes. And so I think the idea was they have a bit of a gaming background. So they wanted to make it more playful and more visual.
Yeah.
This is how it all originated. We've been perfecting that for the first 5 years, basically. When there was like not much of an AI hype going. And integrated thousands of APIs and like built out like a very visual approach.
It's longer than 5 years though, isn't it?
Yes, and now, this was from 2016 to 2020, roughly. And then end of 2020, ChatGPT came along, and suddenly a lot more integration with AI technologies, and bringing AI into automation, business process automation, workflow automation, and so on.
Yeah.
And that has accelerated things. But I would say like we somewhat, if you talk about big three of in this space, then we sit somewhere in the middle where we're like, we are probably more powerful than some, but also more approachable than others.
Yes.
So this is a very interesting spot. Like our goal is to be able to also serve moderately technical users. Yeah. So we have a lot of business departments, like operations functions, marketing ops, people ops, also finance teams that are doing stuff with our technology today and automating, bringing AI in and so on. But of course, like on both ends, there is other players that are trying to like cater to the more developer-focused persona, or to like the like to enter like very easily into that space.
Yeah,
and so we're trying to make it very playful, very visual, but also keep like the sophistication so that you can really get also more complex business problems solved in our platform.
We should probably, the sort of space of automation is a bit of a mixed bag. So we should maybe very quickly, for people who don't know, make where it fits in, because you sort of, you can do anything from, I don't know if this is really a non-power user, but you know, Apple has shortcuts and workflows and Apple script, a myriad of different options. People can also just do Bash scripts, Python scripts, etc.
Yeah.
And then on the other side of things, you do have kind of visual builder tools from, I guess, Microsoft and things like this, these sort of BI tools. But companies like Make fit somewhere in the middle of that. You know, it's something, you have some very user-friendly, easy things, but also some more complex stuff. But maybe we should say, like, if people are reaching to a platform like Make, what are they generally trying to do?
Yeah, so maybe it's easier to kind of like say a few words about what we are doing, but then also what we are not doing, because like there's a lot of other things you could think of. So so we basically take a very modern, very visual approach to API-based business process automation. And so this means you get a visual canvas where you can drag and drop together modules, which are basically API integrations into thousands of software as a service applications. Or if they don't have an out-of-the-box integration, you call them via HTTP and you're getting into that connection with, via API. But then, of course, like the automation space is much broader. There's traditional RPA, which is more like interface automation. You also have browser-based automation Selenium technologies, etc. And you also have no-code building capabilities for like front-end or like portals and so on. All of that we are not doing, right? So we are really focused on this like visual business process automation via API.
Why would you say you're not no-code? Because, I mean, to many people, it might appear similar.
I think you can classify as no-code. Yeah. But I think a lot of people, when they talk about no-code, they think about building websites or building customer portals. Maybe some talk about no-code databases. If you want to like talk about no-code as like a trifecta of like front-end, back-end, and middleware, then we are this middleware. So you can see us as a no-code middleware, potentially, right? But but like very, very automation integration focused. And the exciting piece now is with AI getting much more powerful and having almost like human-like capabilities, you want to get these AI capabilities into your business processes.
Yeah.
And that's where like AI needs automation and automation needs AI. So the two things come together.
Yeah.
And we see a lot of acceleration in that space, actually.
Let's come back to the AI a bit in a second, because there are reasons. But just in the more traditional automation space, as we said, there are kind of the big three, including yourselves. Possibly the other two have a little bit more brand awareness for whatever reason. I mean, most because we're American, probably. Who knows? How have you managed to compete and be a point of difference between those in the past?
So I think like what we've competed on was mostly usability.
Okay.
So if people get into our platform and they start building, we want this to be a joyful and playful experience. Yeah. But we don't want to take away from this being business software, right?
Yeah,
so it needs to be powerful, it needs to be secure, it needs to be scalable. I think we check all of these boxes, but we also make things more intuitive, more visual, and more usable. So often when we win on usability and like ease of use and just the way how you can be faster because of how you can build automations and make. I think we've made tremendous progress actually on brand awareness. So we were probably one tenth of some of the other players, but we've like caught up quite a bit in recent years. So I'm quite happy with the progression,
especially since the name change. Yeah. And just out of interest, like obviously it's a sort of power user area, but I would say things like Apple Shortcuts has also got a lot better, including remote automation and more recently AI, which we'll come back to. But is that ever a competition either, or is it a very sort of different group of users?
I think we are not necessarily competing on that side. Ultimately, we think about business operations and how to automate those.
Okay.
And yes, of course, we have individuals who like use us for personal use cases.
It tends to be local.
I know even some employees of our teams that
I do as well.
Are building like some really cool like personal automation projects. But ultimately, like I see this more as a means to an end where people get to know the platform and learn what you can do with it.
Yeah.
And then they can bring it back into the business context.
Yeah.
But I don't think I want to ultimately compete on like consume automation type of use cases.
I think it's just interesting how they've actually really, oddly, they've pushed very hard into making it a lot better.
Yeah.
But I think it has a discoverability issue as well. I think people are more likely to discover tools from the three companies than the tools they have already, because they're easier to find them.
Yeah.
You search for like automation, you'll find one of those, not Apple Shortcuts, even though it's on the machine you have.
We're actually using Apple Shortcuts ourselves. We can like open one of our gates of like the garden gate. You can open with Apple Shortcuts.
Oh, really?
We automated that with Apple Shortcuts.
That's good to know.
So that's a fun one, like on a personal automation side.
Oh, you mean actual gate? Okay,
yeah, like an actual gate. Yeah,
I thought you meant the gate to a platform. Okay,
gate to like a garden gate, basically.
Yeah.
So it's funny, but like it's not what you would think about when you think about like business processes.
No, for sure. And there's been the AI space is now expanding this. So let's come into that. I think one of the reasons I switched to Make was you were pretty sure the first of those three platforms to offer OpenAI APIs. I was using DALL-E. I'm not sure if that is even OpenAI, but to do some image generation out of a Google spreadsheet, basically. And it was pretty poor.
Yes.
And nothing to do with you. Just
the space has changed so much over the last few years. Yes.
So what kind of sparked the idea to jump on that relatively quickly, maybe in a time when not that many people were thinking it was something they wanted? Yeah.
So I have quite some people in my network that like I'm very close to the AI space as well. And in the conversations with them, I realized immediately, hey, this is probably something that will take a while, but the capabilities can be tremendous, especially when reasoning gets better and so on. And so the use cases were, of course, not super exciting, and yes, you could create some images and like some, and the quality was okay-ish, but I mean, like we all know the progression that this made over the last few years. But like, it definitely felt like something new, something exciting, and like I think like we integrated as soon as the API became available. So we were early just because like we were kind of like in the space, knowing what's happening on that side. But what really then like accelerated this. We saw the immediate uptake in our user base.
Yeah.
So from day one, as this became available, people got excited about bringing AI into their workflows, playing around with it, maybe also doing some things that aren't of big value, but just to try it out. And we could just see like the excitement and like the usage has been surging tremendously. To give you a feeling, like now that things are already much more popular, if I just look at AI app usage, so like whatever AI apps you can connect via Make today, then over the last 2 years, this has been growing more than 700%. Mm. So you can imagine like how much of like new user traction and use cases and also experimentation happens in the AI space, and how much like AI and automation and API integration is already connected today.
Yeah.
So we could like, and this is now, and like we saw like this hockey stick, like from the, like now if you zoom in, like it looks much smaller, but back then, but even then you could see like how fast like people pick up on it and use it. So we kept investing and bringing more AI tools and it paid off quite a bit.
And is there any risk from the sort of growing trend of MCP servers enabling to do that to a degree kind of within the AI tools themselves? We're still a little bit too developer focused at the moment, but.
Yeah, so I think the MCP space is interesting. So it opens up new capabilities for our own platform.
Yeah, for sure.
Because you of course can also offer like the MCP protocol to the AI players so they can build robust automation via MCP core. So we've been working a lot on like making our technology available via MCP directly.
Yeah.
And then of course we want to integrate like third parties via MCP. So we do basically both sides, MCP server and MCP client.
Yeah.
But do I see it as a risk? Not yet. I think like API seems to prove to be more reliable at the moment. And ultimately what I see a lot in the use cases is there are areas where you want to be absolutely certain about what is your workflow actually going to perform.
So
like when I talk with customers, like I see a lot of excitement around AI use cases, but ultimately I see a spectrum of customers sometimes needing something more agentic in nature, but sometimes maybe they just need AI in a workflow, and sometimes they actually prefer things being executed deterministically,
yeah.
especially when there's compliance rules, like let's say financial yeah. processes, etc. Yeah. And so then it becomes a mix of that.
Actually. It's interesting. I saw a presentation, and it is public now, so I saw a presentation from DeepL last week.
Yeah.
Another German company, well, you're not German, but a German company who were aiming into this sort of enterprise, slightly more deterministic AI-based automation. But yeah, getting the guardrails in place to be properly deterministic is quite challenging.
Yeah.
Even on some of the experiments I've had, which is a limited MCP server, you know, every time I test it to show it to someone, I get slightly different results. So you're never really sure exactly what that person's going to see.
Yeah, and it sometimes goes rogue, and sometimes it works flawlessly. And like for some use cases, this might be okay.
Yeah.
But other use cases, you want to be sure, right? And so, like,
it's
I can give you a good example.
Because it's not very intelligent. If it is deterministic, it's kind of odd. It's like it wouldn't be anything new if it was completely deterministic.
Yes. In some ways. But I think like so. One thing that I would see that I see quite a bit is, if somebody wants to build an agent, the way you can do this in Make today is you have like you pick an LLM that like does the thinking and the decision making. You give it a prompt so it knows like, hey, what am I trying to achieve here? And then you equip it with tools, right? Like you do everywhere. But these tools can be workflows again.
Yeah.
So now instead of like saying, hey, you have full access to my CRM system, you can do something much more nuanced where maybe it can look out contacts and customers and opportunities. Yeah. And maybe it can modify leads and opportunities. But it's rule-based in the sense that like you know exactly what actions it can take and maybe can be even a combination of actions that can only be executed together as a deterministic sub-process of an agentic use case, right? And so suddenly you become you get a level of control into that autonomous agent. So it can like reason and decide on its own, but it's also somewhat having a bit of a guardrail in terms of what are the actual actions I can take.
Yeah.
And so you can achieve this by combining deterministic tools that are workflows that are like predefined with like the reasoning and autonomy of the agent, basically.
And is Make now also offering anything from the sort of other side? Like, you know, I want to create a workflow that does blah, 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 and the platform sort of creates it without you having to piece together all these bits and pieces.
Yeah. So we very recently, we had our own customer conference. We hosted it in Munich. We had 700 customers there. And we announced what we call our agent Maya, which basically builds the automation flow for you. It does it in a, again, in a visual way. So we really believe in visual. So you can actually see what it's building so that you kind of understand what will it do afterwards. But you're literally then going from clicking in the canvas to now prompting the system, hey, I would like this type of an automation. And it builds a first version for you. Now it can do all the mapping and so on with AI as well. But ultimately, you will probably want to edit from time to time. And so if you think about it from a human perspective, I think the fastest way to get your point across is text, speech.
I know,
So like, I think that's also why like technologies like Whisper and like the dictation tools get Whisper, really get popular now because you're so much faster than even typing.
It's become a commodity, oddly. It's like every tool now has a transcription.
But on the flip, but on the flip side, the fastest way to consume information as a human is probably visual, seeing it. So, so I would say like I prefer, for instance, reading a text over listening to a voice message, and like getting a visual on something is even faster.
Yeah.
So if I can visualize again what the AI built, I think it's more powerful to kind of grasp the concept quickly. So I think like you will need this combination is at least at this point our belief, but like nothing is set in stone here.
And generally, some of the biggest issues I've hit with these platforms is usually you know debugging. Oh, this I've got. Things coming from this input to an output and it's not what I expect. I want to see what's coming so I can shape it. And you have a bunch of these sort of data shaping tools. Does Maya also let you kind of do that kind of querying? Oh, I'm not getting the output I expected. What do I need to do? That kind of thing.
Yeah. So that's definitely what we want to offer to customers. We are an active development of it. So we have it in closed beta at the moment. And we have some first users working on it. But we haven't yet like launched it more broadly in the market. So we want to make sure we get this right and like it really helps. A couple of years ago, we already launched something where you just prompt our system and it builds you a flow. It was okay. Now we switched that off because we felt like it's not up to the standard we want to have. But now and then we still get like a an angry customer complaining that we switched it off. So some people got value from this early version already.
Yeah.
But I think like we can do much better in what we're going to launch now, basically.
Okay. Maybe sort of in a more general question with platforms like yourselves, you know, when you're integrating with lots of other third parties, you're always at the whim of their APIs, their changes, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And people complain to you about something that you didn't necessarily even know was going to be a problem. From an engineering perspective, like how do you keep up with all of this?
Yes, so I think like you want to have like a healthy balance between like the applications you're maintaining yourself, the ones where you partner with the companies and they maintain it, and then like you have a long tail where you need to also be a bit more reactive. But you are right, like sometimes overnight a company decides, hey, our API is now paid. And then suddenly, like, they are locking in their customers and forcing you to, forcing their customers to an enterprise plan. And then we get the complaint, hey, why do you not connect to the system anymore? Yeah. And we are like, this is beyond our control. Like, every vendor can make their decisions. But ultimately, I believe, like, your customers, so you are the guardian of the data of your customers as a software as a service application. And like if your customers want access to that data via API, you should allow them to have access to that. So I kind of find it a strange business practice to lock down the API behind like very expensive plans. And it's not very customer friendly. So we believe in like a very open network where like people like can really like leverage the technologies that they prefer and like really build like good technology across those systems. But yeah, from a technology perspective, we have some high focus apps where we see a lot of usage, a lot of demand. We maintain them, we perfect them, we even like iterate on like how we shape them. Then we have the ones we work together with like our technology partners to keep them up to date together. And then there's a long tail where it's like case by case, basically.
I have kind of small and large examples. I think the one I use very, very regularly, which is eternally breaking because it's one developer, is a platform called Raindrop, like a bookmark thing. And I use the APIs a lot to trigger other stuff.
Yes.
And he's eternally breaking it because he just gets busy on other things. And it's
so that's the cases where we kind of, we don't have control on it and we're not so close to it.
I think it's what brought me to you because I think it used to work on Ift and Zapier.
Yes.
And then he decided, oh, I'm only going to make it work on Make.
Okay.
I was like, oh, okay, well, I guess I switched to Make.
I think that's the interesting piece about the business is even if like the majority of the customers have very similar set of applications. You want to also offer this long tail of integrations. Yeah. And by now we have more than 3,000 that we supply out of the box. Because like an individual user might have like 90% of his apps covered, but if there's one app that they love and you don't have, then you might lose the entire
Can
customer.
The community contribute?
Yes, so a couple of things. So first of all, like everybody in the community can build their own custom apps. And then they can reach out to us to publish them.
Okay.
So we allow that. We also make sure that like the ones we publish, like they live up to quality standards. But you can have as many custom apps as you want. So I know of a lot of customers who use a lot of our public ones, but then also build their private ones that are fitting more to their use cases. And there's a very interesting approach that you can take here, which is instead of using the out-of-the-box connectors to the standard systems, you think about it more in business objects.
So
I give you an example. Like we have customers who they have a CRM, and now, of course, we have like a standard connection to all the big CRM players. But instead of just using that, they created objects like customer and invoice and order, which are like using different API endpoints from that CRM, but they package it in a way that it gets super intuitive for the business user.
Yeah.
And now they use these custom apps in their automation projects instead of the standard API integrations that we provide out of the box.
I don't think I ever looked down that path, but
It makes sense when you have a lot of people in the business.
Yeah.
So let's say like you have like 100 people in your business and 50 of them are automating. We have some of these like scale-ups and digital native companies that do it this way. And in these cases, it actually makes sense because it makes all your business users faster. Because they never need to think about, oh, does this sit in that database or in this Airtable or in this ERP or CRM? They just need to go for the business object.
Yeah.
And like there's just one team maintaining the APIs behind and exposing it via customer.
Yeah. And switching back a little bit to the AI side of things, maybe we'll fix this in editing. We were talking a little bit about the agentic side of things. Are you also looking into that side of some kind of access to services that don't have APIs through agentic kind of headless access tools. These sorts of things are, you know, they've existed for a while, but they're becoming more powerful. And something like using a platform like Make might actually be far more useful than these agentic browsers, which seem to generally be a bit of a not that useful to anybody. But in a platform like yours, that might actually be more useful to access services that don't have APIs.
Yeah. So what I see happening now in the market is that there's more and more of these technologies that are somewhat agentic in nature, but they are UI-based.
Yeah.
So they decide, like, where do I need to click in the system? And then the ones that are more sophisticated, they even, like, allow you to store the path of how it clicked in the past. So it gets more reliable and doesn't need to figure it out with reasoning every time again and again. But, like, if it found the right path, you can almost, like, store it, even if it doesn't have its separate URL or something. And our approach at the moment is to partner with these players.
Yeah,
like, we are really, like, focusing on the part that, like, is our expertise. And I think it's a bit early to say, like, what are the players that are going to succeed in this market. I see some of the big LLM technologies trying to offer their own technology in that space of, like, this front-end browser-based agentic automation type of capabilities. And ideally, we integrate with all of them, Maybe at some point, if this gets more reliable and, like, more stable, we want to offer, like, the basic ones out of the box on our side. But we haven't made any decision on that yet. And overall, like, it's always been great to, like, partner with other technologies. And even today, like, we offer integrations to even other automation platforms. So we are not locked down. Like, if you are using Make, that doesn't mean you cannot use any of the others. You can even connect them and interact between them. And I think that's exactly back to my belief that it should be open and you should use the technology that does the job best for you.
I guess an obvious one. When we said the big three, I forgot there's another one that I should know about because it's based in Berlin. And I did some work for them. N8M, which you can self-host. So it actually possibly makes even more relevant to want to trigger those because there could be reasons it's self-hosted because it has access to things that a third-party service couldn't access. Yeah. You know,
I think like this is where like probably we have a bit of a difference between like their target customers and ours.
Yeah, for sure.
The customers that they are targeting are like more techie, they are willing to self-host.
The kind of people like me, I just can't be bothered to self-host.
And, exactly. And like I know a lot of engineers who would never want to self-host themselves either. But we were trying to kind of be more like, let's say, for the business user, like a moderately technical user as well, and make sure like we offer this space much more.
But one of the things I guess on that is the reasons that people would rather trust you is there's a lot of security, potential security vulnerabilities of, you know, connecting to all these multiple services and data leakage, and there must be a fair task to keep an eye on as well.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And we've grown our team a lot. So like by now, Make overall is 380 people.
Okay.
So we've been growing quite a bit. So 7x over the last 5 years. And like, especially as we scaled up and allowed like more and more also like larger customers to leverage our technology, we need to make sure it's scalable, it's secure, it's reliable. And we pride ourselves to do a very good job on that side. And I think especially if you are a larger customer, you want like this level of scalability as well. And not everybody is up for like patching the stuff all the time on their side themselves and like making sure they maintain. And so like that part we can do for you basically.
It's because I don't think I've ever had any notification to rotate access keys or anything like that, which you do in a lot of other platforms. And it's often really annoying because you forget about it and then it's like, oh, it doesn't work anymore.
Yeah.
I don't think I've ever had that as an issue. I don't know if you're doing something behind the scenes or who knows, but anyway. So apart from Maya, which you mentioned, are there any other kind of big tickets on the roadmap coming up in the next few months?
Yeah, so one thing we haven't really touched on is when we talk about these like fully automated business operations, whether it's deterministic automation or it's autonomous agentic, I think like businesses will like automate more and more of like these day-to-day operations, even in areas where humans were needed, but maybe now you just want the human in the loop to verify but not to automate any, to really like take action anymore. So if I think about the spectrum, I would predict that like over the next few years we get more and more companies to get to almost fully automated business operations.
Mm-hmm.
And now the question arises, how do I keep track of what's happening? How do I understand the monster that I've built of automations, agents, etc.? And already today, we see a lot of our customers having hundreds, sometimes thousands of automations running, or even agents. And what we've invested in quite a bit over the last 1-2 years is building this bird's eye zoom out view that allows you to kind of see across your entire automation landscape. What are the objects that are being touched?
Yeah.
How are different like automations and agents like interacting and are depending on each other? And I think this level of like observability and orchestration is definitely something that we are going to invest a lot in, because I think ultimately, if let's say you want to be like a small business with like massive operations but fully automated, you need this view. If you are the IT team in a large corporate and you have a lot of people like automating, building agents, you need this view as well. So like ultimately, this bird's eye view, we call it the grid in our technology today, and we are building this out. We just launched in beta publicly this summer. This bird's eye view, I think, will be really, really powerful long term.
Okay, it's interesting. You start to get to a little bit of an odd crossover into the more dev-focused automation tools like CI/CD pipelines and things, where these companies have had these kind of maps for a while. The two worlds start to slowly merge.
Interesting. Yeah, I haven't looked at it this way. Yeah, so far we've been more like looking at it with like a, let's again offer a visual layer on top of what people have already built in a visual way, and we make it basically auto-discoverable. So it's not like you need to like configure this now yourself, but it takes it from the automations you've already built, right?
That world is like the service mesh, you know.
Kubernetes, I get it.
It's a whole other world, but they have the same problem.
So I think there's definitely similarities for sure.
It's just business versus backend. I don't know whatever you want to say. Cool. Okay. And from memory, I know this because I'm using it. You have a reasonable free tier if people want to experiment and things like that. You can do a fair few things before you hit. Hit paywalls, but
absolutely. Yeah. So like I have some friends who kind of do like small projects on the side with Make, and since we have a free plan, it's like not just a free trial but like free forever type of plan. Like, of course it's limited in the amount you can automate with it, but it's free, and so like some people like just run like some of their side businesses on the free plan. For us, it's the goal to like empower as many people as possible with like visual automation and AI automation and the ability to start building your first AI agent.
Yeah.
But like, of course, we hope to like win those customers over at some point.
Awesome. All right. I think that's a nice place to stop.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
That was my guest for this episode of the Tech Lounge. If you enjoy what you heard, please head on over to christianjella.com/support to find the ways to support this show. At the very least, please rate, review, or share wherever you heard this podcast. And I'll see you again next time in the Tech Lounge.